There were people around, but the hall was dark and crowded, and I was pretty certain that I had sneaked out unseen. The spaceport had an artificial daylight cycle. During the artificial day, lights shone from every corner. During the night, the lights dimmed down so people could sleep. That was as far as privacy went on Mars. Dimmed halls and mass campouts. As I traveled through the spaceport, I came to see reason in its chaos. The new Olympians had divided the facility into neighborhoods and districts. I, of course, did not know one district from the next, but there were subtle clearings between the wards. Each neighborhood had its own food service and bathrooms. I turned a corner and found a street meeting. A priest or pastor stood on a little wooden stand 2 feet above a large crowd of listeners. Behind him hung a 10-foot-long banner that read, "Legion is among us." His flock of listeners provided better camouflage than the shadows. I walked the outside of the throng as if planning to join, all the while thinking about the banner and testing it against the things Gordon Hughes had said. If Legion referred to demons, then the banner warned that demons or devils had entered the spaceport. We had entered the spaceport, but we weren't the only demonic presence, while Colonel Riley had 5,000 men. The lighting in the wide corridor was dimmed enough for families to sleep along the edges. The outlying crowd could not see the preacher's face clearly in this obscure light, but his voice was sharp.
"Be ye wise as serpents, yet harmless as doves. We're not supposed to live our lives wearing blinders. We are not supposed to lie down, to be sacrificed like lambs."
At first, I thought the crowd was mostly men, but as I pushed my way through, I noticed teenage boys as well. Maybe as many as 2,000 men had gathered to hear the sermon, a pretty big crowd, until I saw tens of thousands of people still lying on blankets and trying to sleep. I pushed through the revivalist flock and walked down the center of a lane, watching the map on the remote. When I reached a clearing between two neighborhoods, I found a shadowy corner and contacted Jackson. "What is your report?"
"The gas wasn't a problem, sir. We threw a couple of pellets into the vent and dissolved the gas."
"Did you test the air?"
"Yes, sir, we did. It stinks, but it isn't toxic."
"And the service corridor?"
"They're still out there, sir. It does not look like they want to come in. Per your orders, we haven't gone out to collect them."
"Good job." The signal from the robot sentry led me through a dark alley. There were no lights on the walls in this area, just a long, narrow corridor in which the light from my remote stood out like a neon target. If I needed a reminder that I was inside a defunct spaceport, not on a street in a city, I found it at the end of the hall. This area may have been created to look like a city, but the back alley I entered led to a maintenance closet instead of another street. I pulled the door partially open. Beyond the doorway, I saw a portable oxygen generator, a glass hose that stretched from the top of the jenny to a ventilation shaft, and three men. The oxygen jenny did not surprise me, but the three men operating it did. I expected Bible-toting dupes like the men I had killed in Seattle. What I found was a trio of government-issue military clones. Colonel Martin Riley's men. Backing away from the door without closing it, I left the alley. "Jackson, what's the status?"
"Same as before. They keep pumping gas and we keep neutralizing it. Those chicken shit bastards are still loitering in the halls."
I wondered about the men waiting in the halls outside the food court. Were they clones too? Had Riley joined forces with the new Olympians? It didn't make sense. Why would he join the new Olympians? As I thought about it, I realized that I had not seen any of Riley's men the entire day. He had 5,000 troops, supposedly 1,500 of whom were on duty at any given time. The combat armor his men wore was different than ours. It was covered with white enamel so it could be spotted from a distance. They belonged to the Corps, but they did the work of policemen. I hadn't even seen any of Riley's men in the Grand Arcade, and he should have had hundreds of men patrolling the area.
Speck! Riley is behind this?
I needed to report the defection to Cutter. But before I mentioned this to anyone, I needed to make sure this was Riley's work and not the work of a few rogue Marines. I had not meant to mention this to anyone until I knew what was what, but Curtis Jackson, who was still on the link, overheard me talking to myself.
"Riley? Colonel Riley? He's working with the Martians? You mean those are turncoat Marines out there in the hallway? We ought to go out and kill those bastards!"
"Negative, Colonel. Do not engage the enemy."
"General, those clone bastards have attempted to murder my men."
"How many men have you lost?"
If they had better weapons, they'd use them. I'd have lost a lot of men if that gas had turned out to be noxium instead of chlorine.
If Riley is behind this, he's got M27s and 5,000 men.
We better inform Cutter that Riley's gone south.
Let's hold off on that court-martial until we know what's what, Jackson.
Yes, sir.
Looking around the hall, I saw people watching me. They did not seem to know who I was, but they knew I did not fit in. Jackson, have your techs track my signal and get ready to move.
Ready to move, sir?
I'm going to follow those clones and see where they take me. If I give them enough space, maybe they'll show me who's in charge. People were looking at me now. Along the nearest wall of the hallway, people stood on their blankets and watched me. It had not occurred to me before that moment, but now I saw it clearly. These people did not have electronic devices, no flashlights, no media link shades, no communications devices, no computers. The muffled glow from my remote communicator might as well have been a spotlight. As casually as I could, I lowered the remote and continued down the hall. People watched me, but nobody approached. When I glanced back, though, I saw a group of men coming after me. There was a T-junction up ahead. I could go left or I could go right, but I could not go straight. I chose to turn left, the direction that took me farther away from the Grand Arcade. My instincts told me that people seldom crossed neighborhood lines in the spaceport. The picnickers along the walls eyed me carefully as I crossed the clearing that marked the border between one neighborhood and the next. I slowed and waited to see if the men would follow me. They did, and they didn't. Three men turned the same way I had, walked a few feet into the hall, and slowed to a stop. They stood at the edge of the new neighborhood, searching the gloomy corridor, looking for me. Deciding to blend in with the locals, I spotted a vacancy along one of the walls and walked right up to it as if I belonged. I sat down. A man on the blanket to my right leaned over.
Who the speck are you?
Just visiting.
Yeah? Well, go visit someplace else. That is not your spot.
Well, who does it belong to? Where are they?
Sanitary pass. Not that it's any of your speckin' business.
I pretended to lavish all of my attention on my new neighbor while watching the men who had been following me in my peripheral vision. They stared in my direction, but the hall was dark, and I was hidden in the shadows. They might have seen where I had gone, but they did not come after me. I watched them disappear around the corner. I was just trying out the new neighborhood.
Yeah. Next time, go someplace else.
Sorry. I killed another minute strolling the neighborhood. The spaceport was still in dusk mode, so people could not see me clearly. As long as I did not use the remote, I would not attract attention. I wanted to know what was going on back at the food court, and I wanted to radio Cutter, but I did not want to risk giving myself away. I waited another minute or two to make sure the coast was clear, then I walked back to the alley. The open door was just as I had left it.
I hope this finishes quick.
You still nervous?
Hell yes. I hear Harris is in there.
Harris isn't so scary.
Get specked. The son of a bitch is a speckin' liberator.
Bullshit. There aren't any specking liberators left.
There won't be any liberators once Harris breathes this shit, I promise you that. This shit makes your lungs blister.
I'm just saying. I'm nervous.
Don't sweat it. If Harris breathes this, he's already dead.
They were clones, fighting against the enlisted man's empire. It made no sense. If I'd been wearing combat armor, I could have recorded their conversation and given it to Intel for analysis. But I had come dressed as a civilian. Apparently, these clones had the same idea. I peered in the doorway and saw they had come in slacks and tees. The night period ended, and the light around the spaceport started to brighten when the first two members of the trio finally emerged from the alley. The illumination level had not reached daylight levels, only the murky shadows of the early morning. The third guy must have been in charge of the oxygen Jenny. His friends left the alley empty-handed. I watched them from across the hall as they turned right and disappeared. My instincts told me to wait for the final traitor. A clone wearing white security armor but no helmet drove up in an old-fashioned electric-powered cart with a flatbed for hauling cargo. He parked outside the alley. The third clone came out to meet him. They traded salutes. Then the new clone drove his cart into the alley. 5 minutes later, with the light level just below breaking dawn, the two men drove out of the alley with the oxygen generator in the back of their cart. They drove slowly, talking happily, not looking back.
staying about 50 feet behind them. I followed as they left one neighborhood and entered the next. I followed the cart through a crowded maze of halls and corridors. The illumination hit mid-morning levels, and I thought about using my remote to check in with Jackson. But the bastards in the cart kept driving forward. I would lose them if I stopped to chat. We turned a corner, and there it was, the Grand Arcade, with its five-tiered ring of stores that now served as a campground for refugees. This time, though, no one noticed me. I was just another new Olympian, walking around the spaceport at the break of another unhappy day. People noticed the clones driving the cart with the oxygen jenny, however. I saw a few heads turn to follow them. We crossed the arcade and continued down a main hall. Arteries such as this one had been constructed to handle tens of thousands of harried travelers at a time. The cart entered a nearly empty hallway and started to pull away. By the time I reached the corner, it had disappeared. Fortunately for me, there was only one place it could have gone, a doorway with a sign that said, "Military Personnel Only." A hand-painted banner hung below that sign. It read, "Believe in Legion." I knew where I was before I saw the trains and the tracks that led 10 miles across the desert from Mars Spaceport to Mars Air Force Base. The train station was brightly lit and nearly empty. Only military allowed, no picnickers. I stood on a large mezzanine overlooking three tracks, three loading platforms, and three trains. An escalator slanted down to the platforms below on one side of the mezzanine, and a cargo elevator lowered from the other. Peering over a rail, I saw the cart parked beside the nearest train. The clones had removed the oxygen jenny from the back of the cart. The jenny was not light. Struggling together, they managed to pull it onto the train without dropping it. Then they surprised me. They paused and gave the platform a security sweep. They entered the train's lead car. I had already boarded the rear car. There were six cars between us. I sat quietly as the train glided into motion. The train slid through a tunnel that ran under the spaceport. After we passed what had once been a stop for Norma Arm-bound passengers, the tunnel went dark. We passed platforms for passengers heading to the Perseus and Cygnus Arms as well. Bright lights illuminated the inside of the train. I left the last car and walked into the next. It was as bright and empty as the one I had just left. Looking through the windows, I had a blurry, blinded view into the car in front of me. I could not see clearly enough to distinguish between men and machinery, so I checked for movement instead. The next car was empty, and the one after that. It soon became clear that my quarry had remained in the lead car with the oxygen generator. I made it to the second car, peered through the window, and found them sitting on a bench, gabbing. I made my move. I eased open the door of their car. They might have noticed the door, but they didn't react until they saw me charging toward them. I slammed the edge of my hand across the throat of the first clone as he stood to face me. The second man rushed me. I kicked out at his kneecap. With his knee broken and his friend dying, the Marine forgot he was a Marine. He backed away on his ass and tried to climb to his feet. I grabbed one of his ankles and pulled his feet out from under him. The survivor lay on the floor, cradling his knee. "I need to make a quick call. Don't run off." I pulled out the remote. "Jackson, you there?" "Jackson, report." Thinking I might have broken the remote during my wrestle, I switched to an open channel and listened for chatter. My men had gone silent. The train had crossed the spaceport by this time. Looking out the window, I saw the automated airlocks. Once we passed the airlocks, we would enter the Martian Badlands. The train slowed as the first door of the airlock slid shut behind it, preserving the breathable atmosphere inside Mars Spaceport. The outer door opened, and we slid into the wastelands. "Churchill Command, come in. I have a hot mess down here. Somebody tried to gas my men."
"Do you know who?"
"I'm still investigating, but I think it was Riley."
"Did you say Riley?"
"I caught the men with the gas. They're clones. The question is, who sent them? They were on their way to the Air Force Base."
"I see a train leaving the spaceport on my monitor. Want me to stop it?"
"Hell no. I'm on that train."
"What about your men?"
"I can't find them. I told Jackson to circle the wagons. Now he's not answering."
"Damn it! You went out on your own?"
"There is a lot going on here. More than we know. There are a couple of spaceport security men on the train with me. One's a bit stiff, but the other looks like he might be helpful."
"General, will you be able to control yourself long enough to have a productive conversation?"
I'm sure we will get along fine. I sat down beside the man with the broken knee. Ever wonder about life after death? You will know the answers very soon, Marine. I heard you and your buddies chatting. One of you said I was a Liberator clone. Another one didn't believe him. Which one were you? There had been a third clone, but I was trying to make a point.
Are you Harris?
In the Liberator flesh.
Get specked, you alien-loving bastard!
What happened to my men? Listen up, Marine. It has been a long day, and I am not in a good mood. Now tell me what happened to my men. That's an order. It should have been in his programming. Post-Liberator military clones followed orders automatically. You specking tried to gas them, asshole. You tried to gas them, now I can't reach them. What happened to them? He stared at me like a young, scared cadet trying to stand up to a drill sergeant. Okay, then let's start with the easy stuff. What's that? I pointed to the oxygen generator.
It's an oxygen generator!
What were you doing with it?
Generating oxygen!
We've got a few minutes before we reach the base. Come clean and I might even let you live. Maybe you've already made up your mind to play it the hard way. Do you have any idea how much pain I can cause you before we dock? Why do you want to kill my men?
We weren't trying to kill them! We knew you would stop the gas! The distraction! We're supposed to distract you!
Distract us? Distract us from what? The man did not answer. I got the feeling he did not know. Who sent you? Riley?
The Colonel is not in charge!
He turned toward the front of the train. I followed his gaze. Looking through the windshield, I could see Mars Air Force Base in the nearing distance. It looked like a butte in a desert, tall and flat and deep in shadow.
Kill me!
I stood as if I wanted to get a closer look at the base. And then I kicked him across the face. I stripped the bastard naked and tied his hands, feet, and mouth with his clothes. The train slowed as it approached an airlock that led to the base. The outer door slid open, and we rumbled into the tube. The door closed. The inner door slid open. I recognized the base from the time I had visited it many years ago.
General?
I reached down to shut it off, but stopped when I saw who it was. Jackson, where the speck have you been?
Right here, sir.
I've been trying to contact you.
The bastards must have blocked our signal.
I need to go. I stepped off the train and crossed the platform without bothering to look for cameras. If they had people staring into monitors, they'd already seen me. The only way from the train tracks to the base was up a steep escalator. I climbed the stairs two at a time as the escalator whisked me up. No one met me at the top. The base lobby was dimly lit, spacious, and clean. The air was cold. My breath turned to steam. But there were no picnickers, which made this icebox the Garden of Eden in my mind. Moving at a fast creep, I crossed the shiny black granite floor. I was not alone. I reached the door that led from the lobby to the offices. I stopped, listened, then took a few steps back. I pulled out my communications remote. Jackson?
Yes, sir.
Load your men on the transports, double speed.
Yes, sir. Are we going back to the Churchill?
No. Come to the Air Force Base and tell your men to hit the deck running. I think the locals might put up a fight.
Do we get to shoot this time?
This is not a civilian facility, Colonel. You have permission to kill anyone who gets in your way.
Aye, aye, sir.
I contacted the Churchill. Cutter, I want you to wreck the rails and board any ship seen leaving Mars. Then I switched off the remote. There were people in the base, but not very many of them. No one entered the lobby the entire time I was there. The train still sat idle beside the platform. I left the lobby and entered the work area, expecting to see clones. I thought Riley might have moved his clones out of the filthy spaceport and into the nice, clean Air Force base. I suppose that was what I would have done. A moment later, I knew I was wrong when I saw a woman walking down a dark hallway. Seeing the woman, I formed a plan of attack in my head. If Jackson moved his men quickly, it would take them 40 minutes to break camp, cross the spaceport, and board the transports. 20 minutes to board the transports and 5 minutes to fly from the spaceport to the base. Flight control on the Churchill would override the base computers and take control of the landing bays. Riley outnumbered us 3-1, but the Churchill would send more troops once we established the need. Riley would still outnumber us, but our transports had protective shields. He'd have no way to hurt us until reinforcements arrived, and we lowered those shields. By that time, he'd know he had no place to hide. I passed through a mess hall.
A base this size would have a large mess for enlisted men and a smaller one for officers. I spotted a group of natural-borns sitting around tables chatting and eating. I did not see clones, nor did I see banners with slogans about Legion. If anything, the mess hall looked regulation. The people paid no attention to me as I walked by, and I pretended to ignore them as well. I listened to their conversation as I passed, but they did not say anything important. After leaving the mess hall, I entered the next set of doors and found myself in a large auditorium briefing hall. The place was empty, huge, and dark as the inside of a coffin. I left, moved on down the hall, and entered the base's nerve center. This area of the building bristled with life. Computers whirred. People gathered in clusters and spoke. Diagrams and maps hung on the walls. Holographic images wavered in the air. All of the people I saw were civilians, natural born, some of them women. I stepped into an empty cubicle. A woman followed me.
We've been watching you since you entered the train station.
I turned and met her gaze.
You're a tall one. You must be Wason Harris.
Who are you?
We were going to come to you, but you were kind enough to save us the trouble.
There was a scent in the air, a sharp chemical scent that was unpleasant and familiar. I knew I had smelled it recently, but I couldn't remember when or where. I caught a whiff of it, then everything stopped.
You can't lose a specking regiment of Marines! You might as well say you misplaced goddamn Mars! What's the matter with you? They're here! They're in the Air Force base right now! I ordered them to come and they came!
How did they get there?
What the spec do you mean? How did they get here?
Everything about the man irritated me. I hated the way he stared back at me through the screen.
I mean, Harris, how did that regiment of Marines travel from the spaceport to the base? They didn't fly to the base. We've been watching the spaceport. None of the transports have launched. You told us to shoot out the rails.
Either your crew is asleep at the wheel or your ship is broken, Admiral. They flew here. They boarded 15 transports, and they flew here. How the spec do you miss 15 transports? They're big. They're slow. They probably radioed in for clearance before they left the spaceport. Check your damn records. You know what? Don't check your records. The transports are here. My men are here. I don't give a shit what your specking records say, Cutter. I watched Jackson walk down the ramp. If your records say something else, then you've got bigger problems than a few missed transports.
Maybe.
Listen, Cutter. We've infiltrated Martian Legion headquarters, okay? I'm closing in on the objective. I've almost finished what I came here to do. You got that? Am I getting through to you?
Yes, you are.
We've almost got this operation complete, and the last thing we need is for you to get in the way. So pack up your specking space patrol and get the hell out of here. Do you understand? Do you read me?
He looked so angry that I thought he might lose control. That would have made two of us. For a moment, I thought he might try to pull rank on me. And then we would have a real problem.
We'll clear out.
Good move!
Do you want me to leave Watson?
Why the spec would I want him around?
And then I said something that made no sense. I did not know how the words had entered my mind or what they meant.
Give him a message for me, would you? Tell that bastard anything that's programmed can be reprogrammed. You tell him that. You tell him that for me.
What was that? What was your message?
Not my message, asshole. Tell him Ray Freeman said that.
I said those words, and the world went dark. I remembered the conversation I had with Don Cutter. But the memory seemed far away, like a dream. And like a remembered dream, it felt surreal and unlikely. I could not recall how the conversation began or how it ended. As I tried to work that out, it occurred to me that I did not know where I was. Well, I was in a bed. Not a bed, a cot. A thin mattress stretched over a metal rack. The moment I woke up, I knew I was alone in a cell. I knew prison cells when I saw them. I'd spent time in a few. I recognized the featureless metal walls and the bright light that shone down from the ceiling. Wondering if I had been beaten or drugged, I sat up. My body responded, and I felt no pain. Pain.
Pain.
I remembered pain so sharp it felt like my head would split open as I spoke with Cutter. Was it a dream? I never experienced pain in my dreams. If I'd felt that much pain in a dream, it would have woken me. I knew who I was, Wason Harris. I knew what I was, a liberator, a Marine. I stood and walked the 8 feet from my rack to the door. This was a civilian prison, which meant it was a lot more comfortable than a brig. I had a modicum of privacy. The cell had a door and walls, instead of bars or an electrical containment field. But there must have been cameras in the cell. I could not see the people watching me, but they could see me as clearly as if the walls were made of glass. The cell was designed for isolation and had no windows. The room had a cot, a toilet, a sink, and bright light shining from the ceiling. Half expecting an electric charge, I touched the door. There was no current, but the door was locked. I knew it would be, but I had to try it. I wondered who had captured me, and just as quickly, I knew. I was on Mars. I had taken the train from the spaceport to the Air Force base. And then what? My memory ended when the train reached the platform.
How much do these people know about me? Do they know I'm a liberator? Do they care?
Frustration welled in my brain. Trying to distract myself, I searched the walls for cameras, knowing that I might as well search for microscopic germs. The walls were completely smooth and cool to the touch, and dark gray in color. I ran my hands over the walls, feeling for bumps and seams, possibly pin-sized holes for cameras and microphones. I found nothing. Kneeling on the ground, I located discrete vents running along the walls. The air in the cell must have flowed through those vents. A fine, sturdy microfiber mesh lined those air ducts. I tried to push it in with my finger, but it did not give, and I would have needed a blade as fine as a scalpel to cut through it. I looked at the toilet and knew I could break it. The sink looked breakable too, but I saw no point in destroying it. This was a civilian holding cell, which meant I was no longer on the Air Force base. When had they returned me to the spaceport, and how? They couldn't have used the train unless... What if Cutter didn't destroy the tracks between the spaceport and the base? As his name crossed my mind, I remembered thinking he was incompetent, but I did not know why. It seemed like that was part of that dream. Okay, I had searched for panels and cameras. I had checked the plumbing. There was one more way out of here, the most obvious way of all. I pounded my fist on the door.
Let me out of here!
Nothing happened. I knew no one would come, but I had to try. I ran a hand across my chin and found about 1 day's worth of stubble. Had I been in the cell for a day? Maybe I had been in there longer and someone had shaved my beard. Sometime later, I had no sense of time. The door opened. The airtight seal gave way, and an acrid chemical odor filled the air. My body stopped working. The paralysis was nearly complete. I still had feelings in my fingers and my toes, but I could not move anything, not even my eyes. A woman walked through the door. Lying on my side, I could only see her calves and knees and nothing more. She knelt in front of me.
Will you look at that? Wason, you managed to stay awake. What a remarkable man you are.
The woman gently rolled me onto my back. She had silky brown hair and liquid blue eyes. I did not recognize her, but on some level I must have known her because I felt the stirring of a combat reflex.
Can you hear me?
Despite my paralysis, blood still flowed freely through my veins. Some of my blood had gathered in my lower regions, inconveniently revealing my attraction to this bitch. A man entered the room.
Look at that, Sonny. He remembers you.
The girl blushed. She looked at my crotch and gave it a dismissive pat. Anger, humiliation, and rage surged through me. I wished I could break free of my paralysis, but my arms and legs ignored me, and I remained perfectly still as the man hoisted my useless body onto a gurney. I studied both of their faces. The girl was pretty and young, with chocolate brown hair that hung past her shoulders and ivory skin. She looked pampered, the kind of girl you'd expect to find lounging beside the pool of a yacht club. She wore a white lab coat, which she left unbuttoned over a low-cut dress. I got a clear view of the tops of her breasts when she fastened me onto the gurney.
He's looking at your tits.
Franklin, he can't move his head, and he can't move his eyes.
So you moved your tits where he could see them?
You're such an ass.
At least I'm not giving peep shows.
Franklin was short and muscular, with a face like a movie star. He had green eyes and blonde hair that he kept patting into place. I swear he was like a specking woman, touching his hair, brushing it with his fingers. I'd only seen the man for a moment, and I already knew that the bastard obsessed about his appearance. He might have been 30 years old, and despite his fascination with himself, he gave off a menacing air.
Leave him alone.
The man stuck a finger in one of my nostrils and turned my head so I was facing him.
They don't want me to hurt you, asshole. If they find a bruise on you, ooh, I'll be in deep shit.
Then he placed his hand so that his palm covered my mouth as he pinched my nose. I could not breathe or struggle.
Franklin, stop it! Stop it!
He pulled his hand from my mouth. Then he leaned so low that our faces almost touched.
You see that, asshole? I can kill you with one hand behind my back.
He stood and fixed his hair.
Oh, look, Sonny. He's drooling. Think he's drooling for you?
I could not see her reaction. She had stepped out of my field of vision.
Go away.
Tell you what, Sonny. You and me. Why don't we do a little dance on that gurney once he's through with it?
Get specked.
Exactly.
He's on the table. I can take it from here.
Oh, but he's so much fun. I want to stay.
Do I need to report you? What do you think Silas will say if I tell him you're endangering the program? What do you think he'll say when I tell him that it's your fault, that Wason is starting to remember?
Maybe he'll let me kill him.
Do you think he'll have you transferred or shot? Maybe he'll flush you through the moon pool with the rest of the garbage.
Just when do you think you're going to talk to Silas?
Tonight.
What makes you think you'll live that long? Who's going to protect you? All you have is the dummy, and he can't even protect himself. I could kill you in front of him, and he wouldn't remember. I could kill you and say he did it.
Are you threatening me?
Take it any way you like. You want rough, I can give you rough. You want sweet, baby? Oh, I can be sweet. I'll give it to you any way you like.
Having shown he was not afraid, the bastard turned and strutted out of the cell. I was able to see him leave only because he had turned my head in the right direction.
Don't worry about Franklin. He won't hurt you. He can't touch you. You are the most important man down here, Wason.
The girl, Sunny, wheeled the gurney down a brightly lit hall and into a long, large room. The tables and furniture reminded me of an operating room, but the place was huge. There was a row of occupied incapacitation cages along the wall. Incapacitation cages weren't really cages. They were gurneys with electric diodes. The men on those gurneys, all of them clones, lay motionless, rendered helpless by electricity channeled from the gurney into the napes of their necks. I looked at the men as she wheeled me past. They were dressed in surgical gowns, their legs stretched out, their feet a shoulder's width apart. If they'd been standing instead of lying down, I would have described them as being at parade rest. Someone had implanted metal filaments into the necks of the men on the incapacitation cages. The filaments channeled the electricity into their spines so that even a small electrical charge left them helpless. They were aware of everything around them and paralyzed from the neck down.
It would be so much easier on everyone if you were more like them, Wason. But don't worry, we won't treat you like that. We want to keep you perfect. No holes, no burns, no wires. You see, Wason, you get VIP treatment. You're very important to us.
We passed rows and rows of men on gurneys. There might have been 1,000 of them. There might have been 1,500. She rolled me into a private room.
We don't want anyone to interrupt us, dear.
She stroked my arm. Then she reached her hand into my pants. If I had not been paralyzed, I might have willingly joined in. And yet, there was something in the back of my mind, something subconscious, maybe even deeper seated than the subconscious. I hated this woman. She repulsed me, and I feared her too.
Don't worry about Franklin. He won't hurt you. I won't ever let him hurt you.
I felt her warm hands around my genitals. If it weren't for the feeling of nausea and helplessness, it might have been erotic. She squeezed a couple of times until my body began to react, and then I felt a sharp stabbing pain that did not go away. She had clamped something cold and sharp to my scrotum. She leaned over me so that her face was an inch from mine, and she smiled.
There now. That wasn't so bad. You know, I don't have to massage you like that.
She kissed me, not on the lips, but on the forehead. Next, she strung a long, thin breathing tube beside the gurney. She clipped the tube to the bottom of my nose.
This isn't going to be pleasant, Wason. But lucky you, you won't remember a thing.
The pain was so searing that I thought my eyes might roll out of their sockets. The world seemed to turn the color of lightning, but I managed to hold on to one thought.
Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed.
During my last instant of awareness, I realized that I was what had been programmed. I was a clone. I woke up in a cell. Even before I opened my eyes, I knew it would be a civilian facility instead of a brig. I kept my eyes shut and eked out the details from the fused clay of my brain. The room would be small, with no windows and a rubberized airtight seal around the door. The air would come through a ridge of discrete vents at the base of the wall. There would be a toilet with chrome pipes and a ceramic sink. There would be a beautiful blue-eyed woman with a soft smile who would be kind to me, but her kindness came with pain. Her touch was warm and filled with venom. There would be a man who wanted to torture me. I opened my eyes and sat up on my rack. The room was precisely as I had imagined. Not remembered, imagined. What other details could I think of? The man's name was Franklin. He looked like a movie star and fussed with his hair. If I could, I would hurt him. But I knew I could not hurt him. I could not understand why, but knew I was no threat to him. I imagined a room filled with clones, too.
Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed. Even me.
Something had happened to me. Somebody had done something to me, and they had tried to erase it from my memory. But I held on to these images. In my head, people and emotions ran together. The girl with the liquid blue eyes represented torment, and I wanted to kill her. I wanted to kill her every bit as much as I wanted to kill Franklin. I had a strange, pseudo-sexual fantasy about strangling her and kissing her on the forehead as she gasped for breath. The thought was repulsive and seductive at the same time. What was happening to my mind? Was this reprogramming? I felt weak. When I stood, the world seemed to spin. My throat did not feel dry, and I was not especially hungry. I tried to remember the last time I had eaten. I'd had a meal on the Churchill. Was that a day ago? Was it a month ago? Was Cutter searching for me, or had he written me off as dead? Don Cutter had been at the meal. The bastard questioned me. He undermined my authority. I wanted to kill him. Did I hate him as much as I hated Franklin and the girl? Sunny. Her name was Sunny. I wanted to kill Sunny. I wanted to choke her. I wanted to kiss her as she gasped her last breath. No. I was not supposed to hate Sunny. I think I was supposed to love her and fear Franklin, but I was not supposed to remember them. I was not supposed to remember this cell.
Legion. I am not Legion. I am not possessed by Legion. I am not one of the swine that ran into the sea. Sunny.
I would kill her. I would kill Franklin. I would not kill Cutter. They were programming me to hate him, but I would not give in. The door opened, and a faint chemical scent trickled in. I did not expect my body to turn limp. But a familiar feeling of helplessness entered my brain as I tumbled to the ground. I lay there, staring straight ahead, unable to do so much as blink my eyes. The girl walked in, and so did the man. I could only see their feet, but I knew who they were.
He's awake again. That's so odd. It's supposed to put him to sleep.
Maybe he's fighting it.
Are you putting up a fight?
Are you in there?
I remembered his face. I remembered his face vividly. He looked exactly as I expected. Green eyes, jutting jaw, smooth skin. I would hold on to that face. No matter what happened, I would hold on to the image. Nothing short of death would make me forget this man's face.
Leave him alone, Franklin. I told Silas you were bullying him.
Franklin reached under my arms and hoisted me onto the gurney. He was short and trim and young and strong. I weighed 200 pounds, but he lifted me as easily as he might have lifted a child. I was helpless. If he'd wanted to, he could have snapped my neck. Instead, he played with me. He curled his forefinger under his thumb, and then he flicked it into my open right eye. His fingernail tapped against my eyeball.
Oh, do you think he knows I did that?
If you scratched his eye...
I didn't.
Even a bruise or a chipped tooth...
I did not hurt him.
I'll wheel him to the OR. I can take it from here.
I'll be specked. You really do have a thing for him. You're hot for the breathing cadaver.
She did not say anything.
Well, maybe I should tell Silas about the two of you.
The girl walked around the table to examine me. Sunny's smile was sweet, and her eyes were as liquid as I had imagined. I could lose myself in those eyes, and I saw her concern for my safety.
What could she possibly have done to me? Why did I want to kill her?
He can't hurt you, Wason.
She reached down and stroked my crotch.
Oh, you're at attention.
Sunny wheeled the gurney through the halls and into a large medical facility, the one I had known we would enter, the one with rows of men. This was not like the barracks in the orphanage. It was a torture chamber. The men did not lie on military racks. They were stretched out on incapacitation cages. Fine metal filaments had been drilled into their skulls. The filaments conducted electricity into their spines. These men were alive and alert, and as helpless as me. She rubbed me and reached into my pants. Her touch was soft, and she stared into my eyes, and I fought. I could not wiggle a finger or flutter an eye, but I put up a fight in my head. She closed her hand around me. She tugged. She rubbed. I thought about battles. I thought about men dying on bloody fields. Marines, clones, synthetic people like me. I once had a sergeant named Tabor Shannon. He was a liberator. He was my mentor. He died in a cave on a planet called Hubble. Her hand was warm. She stroked. She grasped. She pulled. My first friend in the Marines was a clone named Vince Lee. We went on leave together to Hawaii. I saved his life during the Battle of Little Man. Vince and I were two of the Little Man Seven. Seven survivors from a force of 2,000.
Come on now, sweetheart. Relax. Relax.
I once loved a girl named Ava. She was a clone of an old movie actress. When the Naturalborns exiled the clones from Earth, Ava came with me to a planet called Terrano, and she loved me. But I did not love her the way she wanted to be loved. I was restless, and I wanted revenge. She died alone in an apartment on an evacuated planet. I left her there to die. She wanted me to leave. Sunny pressed herself against me. I could feel her body on top of mine. Her hair fell across my neck. Her lips brushed across mine, and I inhaled her breath. It smelled of peppermint and spice. I had a friend named Ray Freeman. I went to Seattle to find him the night I killed those three men. I did not find him. I did find him. He told me that anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed. He said there was a back door in my neural programming. He said my conscious mind could be switched off. Sunny's hand slapped across my face. Because my neck was relaxed, the force of the blow spun my head to the side.
Bastard!
She grabbed my chin and turned my face so I could look at her. A tear leaked from the corner of her eye.
I protected you. Do you have any idea what Franklin would have done to you if I hadn't been there? Do you?
She held up a probe. It looked like a metal model of an infant's hand curled into a fist.
I wanted to make things good for you. I shared myself.
Instead of stroking me, she gave my genitals a nasty slap. Bright pain shot into my head, but my muscles did not respond. Not even when my brain told my body to curl into a ball. Sharp pain followed as she clamped the probe into place.
You won't remember any of this. Next time. Maybe next time I'll let Franklin do what he wants with you.
She pulled a tube into my view so I could see it before she clipped it under my nose. Chemical fumes entered my head. Pain followed. The electricity tied my muscle into knots. When the current stopped, my body went numb and limp. The electricity surged and ebbed, like waves on a beach, like the pain in my head, like my thoughts.
Anything that can be programmed.
The electricity seemed to jump between my testicles and my teeth, making my muscles contract in spite of my paralysis. I curled up into the fetal position. I had no control over myself. When the electricity stopped, my body went limp. I lay on that specking table as limp as a freshly killed corpse. The gas I had inhaled contained ammonia, that much I recognized. It burned my nose and filled my sinuses with flames. Just as every trace of thought left my brain, the combat reflex took over.
Anything that can be programmed can be reprogrammed.
Another trickle of gas floated inside my nostrils, followed by a new wave of electricity. My thoughts turned to the color of lightning, my body curled into a ball. When the jolt stopped, I went limp. A wave of nausea rolled over me. A third cloud of gas entered my nostrils, and a new surge of electrical current tightened my muscles. I passed out after 10 minutes. The pain and the drug finally got me. But this time, I remembered everything.
You're awake already? That's probably not good for you, darling. You're fighting me, and that means we're going to need to speed things up. I don't suppose you remember what we do here, but it's quick and painless. And I will make it worth your while once we're done.
I was weak, too weak to even sit, and my mind was fuzzy. It wasn't that I had just woken up. It was as if my brain had somehow been removed from my body. I had been scrubbed clean and was lying on a clean bed. A crisp white sheet stretched over me from my feet to my chest. There were no straps holding me down, not that restraints were needed. As I became more aware, I realized that there was a tube running from a computer beside the bed to a clip fastened beneath my nose. Parts of my scalp felt numb. I wanted to reach up and feel them, but my arms would not have responded. Faint odors entered my nostrils. The scent kept changing. At first, I smelled organic scents like fruits and grass and oranges, things I recognized. Sunny stood by the computer and smiled down at me. Her brown hair was soft. Her eyes were luminous. I felt revulsion at the sight of her, but I desired her too. As I breathed the chemicals, a rapid succession of images appeared in my head. I saw Don Cutter, actually saw him as if he'd appeared in the room. I saw the Kamehameha, the first ship on which I served. I saw planets, Earth, Terrano, New Copenhagen, Providence Cree, Mars, Little Man, and Hubble. I saw a satellite from the old broadcast network, the pan-galactic highway that once connected the arms of the Milky Way. The parade of images stopped on a picture of Ray Freeman.
What do you see?
Her computer must not have been able to read the images the scents evoked in my head, only my reactions to them. I cannot explain what made me do it, but I decided to lie. My civilian advisor.
That's Watson, right? Isn't that Travis Watson? You've told me about him.
No, someone else. I could see it in her eyes. She did not believe me. I felt a chill, and I wondered if I had just condemned Travis Watson to death. The images began to flash again. They came and went in such quick succession that I did not have time to identify most of them. By the time Sunny pulled the clip from my nose, I could not hold on to a single thought. She gently removed the clip from my nostrils. Then she kissed me and pulled a series of telemetry patches from around my scalp. Her breath smelled like peppermint. Her hair felt like silk as it brushed against me. She took a step from the bed so I could see all of her, and she removed her smock, then her red dress. She was naked beneath the dress. Then she climbed into the bed beside me. Somewhere in my mind, I imagined myself killing her. Sunny took me to a cafeteria. I had no trouble walking. I felt weak and lethargic, but when she told me to walk or stand or make love, I found strength and obeyed. The cafeteria was filled with clones. They sat at tables with trays of food in front of them, but they paid no attention to their meals. Mostly, they stared straight ahead. I sat at the table. The men around me were mostly young, though a few appeared to be in their 30s. The man sitting beside me picked up his knife. He turned it around in his hand, staring at the flat of the blade as if it were a mirror.
Hey! Hey! He's doing it! We better stop him!
Two men in white uniforms approached the table, then they paused.
No. No. Let him do it.
I want to see what it looks like. You ever see it happen?
The other stood mute. The clone stared into the blade. He moved it around so that it reflected different parts of his face. An eye, his hair, his mouth.
Yeah, that's you. Just another clone. This is what happens when they fight it.
Still holding the knife, the clone rose to his feet. His body convulsed for just a moment, and the knife fell from his hand. Then he crashed back to his chair and fell face first into his food. Blood pooled in his ear.
That's it? That's the death reflex?
That's it.
Should we haul him out?
We can get him later.
They left the clone lying in his food, a thin stream of blood now leaking from his ear down to his chin. Sunny came and placed a tray on the table in front of me. She looked at the dead clone.
When did this happen?
Just a moment ago.
Did you see it happen?
He picked up a knife and looked at his reflection.
Are you saying you could have prevented it?
He did have a knife.
Clear him away.
Sunny came back to me and placed a warm hand on my shoulder.
Eat. And be sure you drink the water and the juice. I don't want you getting dehydrated, Wason. I want you healthy and strong.
After I ate, she took me to my cell and helped me into bed. She kissed me on the mouth.
I'll see you soon. Now sleep.
I shut my eyes and did as I was told. I knew where I was and what was happening to me. I was in a cell in Mars Spaceport. In a few minutes, my captors would pipe gas into the cell to disable me. It was supposed to knock me unconscious, but it would only paralyze me. My Liberator combat reflex was fighting the gas, pouring testosterone and adrenaline into my bloodstream, giving me more control over my thoughts than they wanted me to have. They could amputate the gland, but an operation would leave a scar, and they needed me whole. They planned to brainwash me without using anything that might puncture my skin, not even a hypodermic needle. Maybe if I broke a bone. They could fuse the bones together again, but an examination would uncover recently fused bones. If I broke my forearm on the sink, what would they do? I could... I smelled the gas and sank back on my rack. The airtight door hissed and opened. In walked Franklin. He stood over me. The combat reflex started immediately. It was strong. My head was even with his knees, but I found I could move my eyes enough to see his face.
Oh, see, I came early today, Harris. Hope you don't mind. I thought we might have some fun together.
Franklin picked me up and slung me over his shoulder in a fireman's carry. Then he carried me to the toilet and dropped me ass first into a sitting position. Franklin bent over me and studied me from several angles. Then he took a moment to fiddle with his hair before pulling my pants down to my ankles.
Now don't get any funny ideas.
Then he pulled my underwear down as well. He studied me as if I were a sculptor. I was like a doll or a mannequin that he could pose as he wished. He spread my legs so that my groin was exposed. Then he sat me up straight.
You know, if I wanted to cut your balls off, I could do it. If I wanted to kill you, make it look like you committed suicide, I could do it. Without that dumb bitch to protect you, you're just a toy, Mr. Liberator. One of your buddies died this morning. He had a death reflex. I hear he was sitting right next to you. And I bet you didn't even notice. Some killer you turned out to be, Harris. The way I hear it, you just sat there and watched your buddy die. Sunny says you're fighting the treatment. I think she's making it up. She just wants more time with you, psychotic bitch. You know what? Let's see if you remember this.
Franklin lowered his pants and urinated into my face. He was sitting on my rack, pointing at me when Sunny arrived. Franklin had posed me so that I faced the door. He probably wanted to see Sunny's reaction when she entered the cell. So there I sat with my pants and my underwear down around my ankles, urine dripping down my face.
Now look at that, Sunny. I made a living sculpture.
Without saying a word, Sunny turned and started to march out of the cell. Franklin grabbed her arm and she slapped him hard across the face.
You're not gonna tell anybody.
Like hell I'm not!
What do you think Silas is going to say when I tell him how you've been servicing the clone? No, I watched you last night. Oh, it looks like you're losing your touch.
She started to slap him across the face, but Franklin caught her hand.
Do you do that with all the clones, or are you giving the Liberator special treatment?
He was still gripping Sunny's wrist when she slammed her knee into his groin.
I have work to do. I spoke to Silas this morning. I told him about the way you've been bullying my patients. He says I can do what I want with you. If you ever touch this man again, Franklin, I will have you flushed out of the moon pool. You might want to think about that.
Then she rolled the gurney over to the toilet. She lowered the bed so that it was below my knees and tilted me onto it.
It's
Sparing one last glance at the man sprawled on the floor, she raised the gurney and pushed me out of the cell. Sunny pulled my shirt and pants off my body.
I hope you're not shy.
She took out a hose and ran warm water over me.
I'm not sure how much you remember, darling, but I've seen every bit of you quite a few times.
I lay helpless on the gurney as she toweled me dry.
Look at this. Look what that jackass did to you. I'll make sure Franklin never comes near you again.
Sunny rubbed my shoulders and hugged me. I had that image in my head. Sunny's face as I strangled her. I could see her lips darkening, and her swollen tongue leaving her mouth as her eyes bulged. I saw myself kissing her forehead. She was my protector, my sexual, sadistic protector. Franklin was a wolf waiting to snap me up, and Sunny was my shepherd. She led my kind to still waters, and shaved us, and butchered us for meat. As she rolled me to the operating room, I tried to work my muscles. I could not sit or stand or run. I could not make a fist. But I had the ability to move my eyes and tense my shoulders. I could harden my biceps and forearms. I tightened the muscles in my neck and turned my head. I wasn't able to hold my head up, but I turned my chin. It wasn't much, but it was everything. She wheeled me past the other clones and into the room where we were alone. Then she began the process the same way she had before.
How many times have I done this?
This time I allowed my body to react. I hated this woman, but she was my protector. I needed to keep her on my side. She played with me until she was happy.
You are more cooperative this evening, Wason.
She kissed me on the cheek. I wanted more. She stroked me, lazily running her fingers along the contours of my body. Then she brought out the clamp.
You've been a good boy, so I'll be gentle. Gentle. Genitals. There's gotta be a pun in there.
She was more gentle than she had been the last time.
It's sad. You and I have tonight and tomorrow. Then we set you free.
She frowned as she strapped the hose to the bottom of my nose.
I wish we could have met some other way, dear. I think I would have made you happy.
The gas came first, clawing at my sinuses, then my brain. It started with a whiff of ammonia, as I remembered it would. The shit flowing up my nose flew from one scent to the next. I reacted to each scent differently. Some calmed me, most made me sick. And then came the first surge of electricity, weakening me, causing my muscles to contract and pull me into the fetal position. One of the gases was worse than the others. It seemed to bore into my skull like a laser drill, like a slow-moving bullet. I wanted to scream, but I could not work my jaws. My mouth hung open. The scent ended. Then electricity jolted me again, bending me and twisting me, making me roll on that gurney.
I cannot be reprogrammed. I cannot be reprogrammed. I cannot be reprogrammed. I cannot be reprogrammed. Man, not machine. I am a man, not a machine. They cannot program me. I am a man.
In my head, I saw people and places from my past. Places that meant something to me, caused me pain, caused me to convulse, came with chemical stabs and jolts of electricity. I remembered Orphanage 553, the place where I grew up, and the electricity turned my thoughts to the color of lightning. The electricity made my thoughts vanish into a silver-white sheath.
Anything that can be programmed.
The chemicals and the electricity and the pain combined until I passed out. I woke up knowing that the end of this adventure approached. If I did not escape before the chemicals wafted into my cell, I would not escape, not ever. The mornings were always the same. I might have 10 minutes, or I might have an hour. Sooner or later, the gas would spill out of the vents along the floor of my cell, and I would lie helpless as Sunny came to collect me. I went to the toilet, rolled small wads of paper tight, and shoved them into my nose. Each of the plugs was wide enough to fill a nostril, but I crammed 2 plugs in each side. Maybe if I jammed enough paper up my nostrils, I would not smell the gas and would become immune to it. I kicked the chrome fixture behind the toilet. A foot-tall geyser of water spouted from the top of the pipe as I tore it from its base. I expected guards to rush into the cell, but nobody came. So I sat on my rack and watched the water form a pool, then a 2-inch layer on the floor of my cell. Maybe an hour had passed. I could not tell. I spent the entire time digging the jagged edge of the pipe into the side of my thigh, twisting and cutting, creating a 3-inch long gash that I hoped would need stitches. They could remove the scar with a cosmetic laser, but I doubted Mars Spaceport had that kind of equipment. If Cutter heard I had stitches in my leg, he'd ask questions. This was my last chance. Whatever they had planned for me tonight, I doubted my original programming would survive it. So I twisted the pipe and I concentrated on controlling my muscles. When I went limp the night before, I still managed to flex and relax. This time, I would need to use them. I had no idea how much time had passed when it began. The nose plugs had been a bad idea. It didn't matter whether I inhaled the gas through my mouth or nose. So long as I breathed, the gas incapacitated me. With the plugs in my nose, I did not catch that warning whiff before my body went limp. I slumped onto my rack, and one of my feet dropped down into the layer of cold water covering my floor. The pipe, though, I managed to keep my fingers closed around it, even as the strength vanished from my sagging arms. I envisioned myself rising from the bed, swinging the pipe, and striking Sunny. She would see the water on the floor. It wasn't Sunny who walked through the hatch. It was Franklin. He looked at me and smiled.
I bet you were expecting your plaything. Sorry to disappoint you. She won't be returning.
His eyes were so intent on mine that he didn't even notice the water on the floor. A moment passed before he spotted my bloody leg, and his expression went serious. Franklin looked around the cell. The bastard stared at the geyser coming from the toilet.
You've been busy.
This is it. This is the moment.
I focused my thoughts on the hormone flooding my veins and the pain in my thigh, and I launched myself at him. I wanted to leap from the cot, crack him across his skull, and drown him. But the most I could manage was to step into the water and stand on my sagging legs with the pipe hidden behind my back. The dumb speck still had not pieced it all together.
Able to stand up, are you?
Franklin's smile vanished a moment before I stabbed the bloody end of the pipe into his forehead. I stumbled out of the cell.